Hello and welcome to another episode of If My Feet Could Talk podcast. The last episode I did with Tom was amazing. It was brilliant and it did really well. Hello, Oppo. My dog's come to say hello. And this episode is not going to be much different, to be honest. It's another brilliant guest who has a story to tell. Hello. But first, let's have a catch up with myself. It's been quite a few weeks since my last podcast. Today, I celebrated my 1,000th day of running every day today. The big comma, 1,000 days of getting outside, getting active and running every day. I've run 7,195 miles in that period. That's averaging over 7 miles a day. I've raced from 5Ks all the way up to 36-hour races and ultra marathons. No excuses, every weather, each run outside. I was supposed to have raced the Arc of Attrition 100 miler, but mentally, my races last season didn't go as well as I wanted, and therefore I deferred after the after I did the 25-hour non-stop race in October. I deferred the Arc because I just wasn't mentally confident in myself. Physically, I would have been. I was in a good place, but mentally I wasn't. And the Arc of Attrition isn't a race that you can take lightly. And I didn't want to waste my place and not give it physically and mentally 100%. And I'm sure some people probably go, what a jibber, but to be honest, I don't care. It was the right decision for me. So that's now on next year. So my next race, big race that is planned, it is the Southwest Traverse again. I'm looking forward to that. And I'm hoping to be it in a much better place than I was last year, and I hope to nail it better than I did last year as well. Fingers crossed on that one. So, like I said, today was my 1,000th run. I was joined by friends, loads of people doing it virtually as well, but I had a few friends come join me, and one of them happens to be the guest that is appearing today. Now, they weren't originally my planned guest. My planned guest had to postpone and rearrange. The next guest is short notice, but I'm so glad she was able to give me some of their time. So, listeners, watchers, I give you the one and only ASICS frontrunner, Sean Longthorne. Here we go. Recording's in progress. Hello and welcome to If My Feet Could Talk podcast. So how are you doing?
I'm really well, thank you. Yes, very well.
Excellent. It seems so long since we just caught up. As we were just chatting before we went on live, it's been ages. Well, actually about a couple hours, and we went for a nice run together today, didn't we?
We did, to mark your very special occasion, for which I must say again, congratulations. That is that's really some achievement. Well done.
Thank you very much. But what did you think to the route?
I loved it. One of my favourite things about running is when I get to run with people in a new place where I don't know the route. I don't need to worry about how to get back. I just put my faith in somebody else and can just take in the scenery and have a good natter. So it was a great way to spend a day off work.
Yeah, and I like that route because it's nice and simple. You don't have to think about it too much. You can just, it's a nice out and back route, but it's got some nice views along the way.
So, oh, it's stunning. It really is nice.
And we had the weather as well. The weather stopped raining and it was nice and sunny for us, wasn't it?
So. We had a weather window and, you know, as you'll appreciate, we're spoiled for choice down here for running routes, aren't we? So
that's it. I mean, Dan, one of the other guys that joined us, he actually said it's a lot warmer down here. I said, well, that's because we're close to the equator. That's why. So it's, yeah, it's really lovely to have you and the others join me earlier. And for people who don't know who you are, can you just give us a brief insight to who you are and what you do?
Okay, so I'm Sian, and I am, well, I describe myself as early 40s, but I don't think I can anymore because I'm now far closer to mid-40s. But I suppose the key thing that makes me stand out really is I'm transgender. I'm a trans woman, and I transitioned to start living as a female about 2.5 years ago. So I've got quite an interesting story to tell. I think it's interesting and hope you do. But really integral to that has been my running. I've run for many, many years, and talking this morning realised it's more than 30 years I've been running. And I think that just shows how important running is to me. Outside of work, I've got 2 children. Aged 8 and 10, who are wonderful. And for a job, I work for a housing association on their development team, so providing much needed housing down here in the southwest. So I live in a town called Totnes, down in South Devon. So I'm very lucky that I have both Dartmoor and the coast about 25 minutes from my door, as well as some rather stunning trails on my doorstep. So for someone who loves running, it really is a lovely place to call home, really.
It is, and Totnes is literally just up the road from where I reside. And in fact, you have, as we found out today, you actually have a link with my house, don't you? You actually worked on the development of my house many years ago when it was being built. So that was quite a nice little tedious link we had together, wasn't it?
It's a small world.
It is a small world. So where are you from originally, as a child? Where were you born? Where were you raised? And were you a sporty kid?
Okay, so I grew up in Brixham, which is about 25 minutes away from where I now live. So I grew up in Devon, spent my childhood here, and then went off to Birmingham. I studied at the University of Birmingham. So that was quite a culture shock to go from a fairly sleepy fishing town to the second city. But I think it was really good for me, actually. And it opened my eyes to, you know, things outside of Devon. But then interestingly, over time, I sort of crept back down to Devon. So after Birmingham, I went to Bristol. I then went to Taunton, and then made it back to Devon when I lived in Exeter. And now I finally settled back in Totnes. I think Devon has this amazing ability to draw people back in once they've maybe seen a bit more of the world. I certainly love it here, and I don't ever see myself moving away. But to answer your second question, yes, I guess I always have been sporty and active. I think it's part of growing up in Devon. I was always out and about playing with my slightly older brother and our friend, riding our bikes, walking the dog. So I've always been very active, and I found running, I think, if I remember correctly, when I was about 10 or 11. And that was simply because my brother showed a bit of promise as an athlete. So joined the local athletics club, and I was desperate to follow in his steps, and was told basically I was too young at the time, so I had to wait a little while until I was old enough. But as soon as I could, I went along to my local running club, and probably somewhat sickeningly was told that, you know, there was quite a bit of natural talent there. And it frustrated my brother because he was one who trained very hard, and I probably trained less hard when I was young, but managed to get the results. So I ran a lot as a child, but without any real formal structure, but did very well and competed at sort of English schools level and regularly competed for Devon on both cross country and the track. And really, other than a brief hiatus when I was at university, you know, running has always been there, featuring quite heavily in my life.
You must have been one of the few school kids that actually liked cross country running then, because It's normally forced upon us in school, and I hated it.
I loved it, and I think I've actually got a few school records there still, actually. I was one of the few that sort of looked forward to those P lessons and the cross countries, and going out and wearing myself out.
That's good. So, obviously, you mentioned your brother being a bit sporty. Was there anyone else in your family that was possibly allowed this the genes to set in of in the sporting nature?
My dad was, he was always into his swimming, actually, and as a consequence of that, me and my brother, we swam quite a lot when we were younger, and actually I swam before I ran, so I guess that gave me a basic fitness, but other than that, it was, it's more a case of just following in my older brother's footsteps.
Oh, good. So you mentioned, obviously, you got into cross country and athletics. When did you start sort of heading towards the road and stuff like that?
I think it properly happened when I finished university and started working. I suddenly realised I probably had to do something to stay fit and focused. And again, I started running, and I guess the running community drew me back in, and I joined a local athletics club. Initially, it was Taunton, where I was living at the time, and then latterly I went to Torbay Athletic Club. And I think it was a fairly natural progression, really, from training and it being a bit of a social thing, to sort of getting drawn into races. And quite easily you could fill every weekend racing if you wanted to. And I'm one of these people that if I do a race and I enjoy it, then I would do it again the following year and the following year. So quite quickly my race calendar filled up, with fairly local running races, but there's lots of running races to choose from down here.
What was your first actual sort of proper race as an adult then?
Oh gosh, that's...
I know it's only going back like last week, but what was your first...
I really can't remember. I remember doing lots of races as a child. I can't actually remember what I would say my first race as an adult was, but we're probably going back more than a year or two, to be fair. So
yeah, it happens. But you must probably remember what it was like to start running properly again after university and stuff like that. What was that feeling like of lacing those shoes up and stepping outside the front door? For a lot of us, especially those that have never run before, it's quite a daunting thing. But for someone who maybe ran a lot as a child and then obviously starting again, what was it like for you? Can you remember?
The thing I really remember was going out running with my brother, and actually realising how much running fitness I'd lost. Because I'd stayed relatively fit at university by playing football. So, it wasn't as if I went away and did nothing. So there was a fitness there, but it wasn't running specific. And I remember going out for a run with him, and he was just cruising along, and I was really labouring. And I guess it was a bit of a wake-up call for me, actually. Fortunately, I was able to regain my running fitness relatively quickly. And then having joined a club, I think that really helps. And that is... something that, I found hugely beneficial was being a member of a club, because, it improves your running drastically, but it also gives you that social side to benefit from as well. So, it wasn't long before I was sort of back into the groove, and before I knew it, sort of running was fairly integral in my life again.
So when did you feel actually, I fancied doing something slightly harder, maybe a marathon or an ultra marathon. When did the long distance endurance game start creeping into your running life?
So I actually, despite not really running at uni, I actually did my first marathon in my final year at university. And I actually cracked out a sub 3 marathon on my debut. So,
Hardly
it
trained,
was
sub three, away you go.
and actually, that was far harder than I thought. I did
You
a
don't say.
I think, as I have a tendency to do sometimes, I underestimated it. I did the Bath Half Marathon in the lead up to it, and it was actually London Marathon, and I was one of the lucky few who applied, first time and got a place. So probably didn't realise quite how fortunate I was at the time, and certainly to go and achieve a sub 3, with, no formal structure to my running at that time. It suggested that there was some, some running ability there that maybe I should tap into a bit more.
So how much running did you actually do once you knew you got the place? But I mean, when I got a place for my first marathon, which happened to change my life, change the way I looked at things, pretty much saved my life. I went out 6 days a week. I lost my weight. I trained hard because I wanted to make sure I did it correctly. You obviously didn't do it as correctly as you obviously probably did later on. What was your running structure like then?
Yeah, I don't actually recall it having any structure to it. I suppose that the key thing in my mind was just getting used to running longer distances. So, I would gradually run a little bit further, but there was no training program. There was no speed work. It was more a case of just running and just spending time on the feet, really.
What year was this roughly?
That would have been 1999, I think it was
Okay, so
maybe
there
2000.
definitely no Facebook, definitely, well, pretty much no social media to go looking for information. I mean, Runner's World was out probably. You could probably find some crap information in there. So there was little like free plans to download off the internet back then.
Now there was a distinct lack of information compared to what's out there nowadays. I should say when I was in my teenage years, 15, 16, I had a coach down in Torbay. So, I had some idea of what worked, or what I should be doing, but it was very loose, if I'm honest.
But now, obviously, I mean, as we're talking about it, the plethora of information out there is one, it's amazing, but two, can be actually quite misinformating as well, isn't it? There's so much information out there for a beginner to look at. You don't know whether to believe half the stuff or not. I mean, it's crazy that the amount of information out there, isn't it now?
It really is, and it's also amazing how many coaches are out there as well. Because,
Loads.
I can't remember, or maybe they just weren't as visible back in the day. But I don't remember, this number of running coaches being out there.
Well,
So yeah.
as Gary House says, to be an online coach, you just literally put that into your status, online coach.
Yes.
You don't, as you said, there's loads of coaches out there now. And do you have a coach right now, or are you self sort
No,
of
I don't. No,
programmed?
I'm very much self-coached, and have been for quite a while, really. In fact, I can't actually remember the last time I really had a coach. When I was going down to the running club, maybe, 6, 7 years ago, there was somebody who led the sessions. But that was as close as I got to the coach. That night I would just turn up and do what I was told. But there was the other 6 days of the week, it was up to me what I did. And I do wonder, with a bit of structure to my training, I probably could have gone better. It's the what if, really, isn't it? The reality is, my PB days are long behind me now. So actually, I I can't really see the thing.
He said this to me when we were having a coffee, and I've had a thought about that since, and we had quite a deep and meaningful conversation, to be honest. But you say your PBs are long gone. That's those PBs. You're now a different person to them. So theoretically, you're setting new PBs.
Yes, and I think that's the way I've had to treat it in my own head. I mean, ultimately, you know, I've got a list of PBs from, you know, 5K through to marathon that I'm really proud of. And, you know, nobody can ever take those away from me, regardless of the direction my life's taken since I achieved those. So actually, I can happily put those up on the mantelpiece and say, you know, they are my PBs. And actually, what makes me smile is that they were achieved in the times before these super shoes. So if anybody gets close to my PBs now, I tell them it doesn't really count. Because
you're wearing these super shoes, carbon fibre.
The shoes saved them 3 or 4%.
Fair one. Yours is probably done in the old black school plimsolls or something like that.
Pretty much. The Dunlop Green Flash, yeah. I have in my own head separated the old me from the new me. And, you know, there's a few things at play there. You know, I'm a number of years older, although I will say I set my PBs in my late 30s. I think my marathon PB was, I was maybe 37, probably 5K, 10K, half marathon. I was probably like 38, maybe.
And what was it? What was your marathon PB at 37?
I got 2:35 at Chester.
2:35. That's pretty good. I'm not going to lie. That's not half bad, is it? When you think about what our elite marathon runners are currently running, then you wouldn't overly too far away from what they're at now, really.
There's a big gulf, but I think, you know, I'm really proud of it because I achieved that when, you know, I had a young family, I had a full-time job, and, you know, running was just something that I did, you know, really as a hobby. And 2:35 was my A goal, you know, and it was the one time that I did a marathon where the stars aligned. You know, I've had a number of marathons where things have gone wrong, you know, whether it was in the lead up to it, whether it was on race day, whether it was my nutrition, you know, my training, something always went wrong apart from at Chester. And I remember coming down the finish line and I knew I was going to get a 2:35 and I could feel my calves cramping up, but I knew I was going to cross the line. Just this sense of elation, this sense of you've done it. Now, let's be honest. Most people, even if they're not a runner, know what a good marathon time is. And, you know, I was so proud, and I still am so proud to say that I got 2:35, because
some people never ever reach that sort of pacing for a 10K, not alone a marathon. So, you know, it is something it should always be proud of. And it's quite an incredible time. And that moves me on to, you know, some of the other stuff that you've achieved in your career, running career. And that includes winning the Dartmoor Discovery amongst other races. So let's talk about Dartmoor Discovery, because those that are local will know about it, because it's one of the most well-known ultramarathons in the Southwest. But for those that don't know anything about it, do you want to explain what the Dartmoor Discovery Ultramarathon is?
Yeah, so it's on Dartmoor, but it is on the roads of Dartmoor. But as you might imagine, it's fairly hilly as a consequence. And it's just over 32 miles. And I believe it's the longest single loop ultra road marathon in the country. And it's got a sort of fairly unique following, really. And I think, as I said to you this morning, when I first ran it back in 2016, it was my first ultra. It was my first foray into anything above 26 miles. And I don't think I fully appreciated what it meant as a race. And I don't think I fully appreciated what it meant to win it. And yeah, I was very proud of winning it, and I was very proud with how I ran it, because, you know, having never ran an ultra before, it was very much a step into the unknown. Throw in the hills of Dartmoor, and it had the potential to go horribly wrong. But I paced it fantastically well, and I remember I think about the halfway point, I was about 10 minutes down on the lead runner, who was a friend of mine called Mike, who'd run the race before, so he knew how to pace it. But I was very determined to run my own race, and I caught Mike at the marathon point, and I still felt fairly fresh as you can do after 26 miles. And I remember just in the last sort of 6 miles taking me home, I just managed to find this rhythm. And I put about 10 minutes into Mike in those last 6 miles. And it was one of those races again where the stars aligned. And it's in there with one of my favorite races of all time.
So now you can appreciate the race, because you've done it, you've been there, and you've revisited it recently, and we'll talk about that later. But thinking about it now, and knowing the fact that you've won probably one of the hardest road ultras in the UK, you know, single loop ultras, it's old school running as well. It's, you know, I mean, the fact that you still can pay by check shows how old school it is, you know what I mean? What's that, how does that make you feel now, sitting here thinking about it? How does that make you feel now?
It's wonderful. You know, and as I said with my PBs, it's achievements that nobody could take away from me. And you know, I've got a lovely Dartington glass bowl, an engraved bowl, on show in my house, in the same way as I've got framed pictures of my marathon times, because, you know, I am a runner, and my running achievements are something that I'm particularly proud of. And as I said to you this morning, you know, people know me as a runner, and I'm not a hugely confident person, but actually, you know, I like to be able to say what I have achieved as a runner, because, you know, as I mentioned, it was all done alongside a very busy life. Mm-hmm. And who knows what might have happened if I'd have had more time to commit to it, but actually I tend not to dwell on those things. You know, I'm happy with what I've achieved. I'm not sat there thinking what if, which is quite a nice way to be, really.
Yeah, I mean we had our chat after our coffee and cake this morning, which was very nice. I did like it. And you mentioned you used to take yourself off to train hard, smash those PBs as a form of treatment and a form of stress release and all that sort of stuff. Why was that? What was causing all that you had to some way go through that hard training to feel that little bit of take the edge off of whatever you were going through at the time?
Yeah, so for a bit of context, really, I mentioned my PBs were in my late 30s. When I won the DD, that was in my late 30s as well. So we're going back to sort of 2015, 2016. And my life was in turmoil, quite honestly. To the outside world, I had it all. You know, I had a lovely family. You know, we were a traditional family with two young, healthy kids. My wife and I both had, you know, good jobs. We lived in a nice house. You know, we had holidays. We had it all. We wanted for nothing. But actually, you know, behind the door, our marriage was in turmoil. And the principal reason behind that was I am transgender, and those feelings were getting to a level that I wasn't able to contain, and it was affecting our marriage, and our marriage was breaking down. And it was just a horrible time, and made worse because the perception that everyone had of us were of this perfect couple. And running at the time was actually my escape. And it was that one time in the day where I could get away from the stresses. And it was a chance to sort of throw myself in, and it was a form of distraction. And I guess what happened is because I was seeing the benefits of running to my mental health, I was running more. Because I was running more, I was running better, and because I was training better, I was getting better results in races, and that was enthusing me to train harder again. So I'd managed to get myself into this, well, it's the opposite of a vicious cycle. I managed to get myself into a cycle of positivity with my
running. The happy pill, the natural
it was.
Happy pill, isn't it?
You know? Yeah, and it was actually the one part of my life where I felt I wasn't failing. And as a consequence of that, you know, I say that I was running my best when my life was in turmoil.
And it must have been hard as well because, you know, you were a parent as well at the same time of an even younger family than what you got now. Obviously, they've grown up a little bit more. But it must have been also hard because if as a parent, and there's nothing worse than thinking that you're failing in life, you know. So that couldn't have helped at all either, not knowing your transgender side of things.
It was a horrible feeling of guilt. And that was the guilt as to how I was feeling, and this fear that if it ever came out, then affected me, my life would be over. Because to me, I was, you know, deeply ashamed of these feelings. And they were feelings that I'd had for, you know, decades, but I'd always felt I could keep a lid on them. But it just grew and it grew and it grew. And it was this horrible feeling of if these feelings ever come out, that I would lose my friends, my family would disown me, I'd lose my, you know, my immediate family and my children, and I would lose my job. Because, you know, transgender is still a hugely misunderstood topic, and that's part of the reason why I tried to be visible and try to normalize it. But, you know, even going back 6 years, you know, it was still very tainted, and I just didn't know how people would react. And
I mean it is, and you know, and it's even if you're not transgender or anything like that, if you've, you know, parents and all that will always fear of losing, if your marriage is breaking down or anything like, you always feel fear of losing your children or your friends, or your family might hate you for whatever reasons, because, you know, so, you know, to add transgender on top of that as well, it couldn't have been easy at all.
No, and I think, you know, another issue that played on my mind was this was playing out in Devon, which, you know, isn't the most progressive of places.
The southwest full stop isn't very progressive.
And my family, you know, were and still are very conservative. You know, my whole upbringing, really, I was surrounded by, you know, white, middle-class, heterosexual people. And, you know, I just didn't have diversity in my life. So I was really fearful of where my life was going to go. You know, it was a horribly stressful time. Unfortunately, my running was there to offer some form of solace.
And because of all this, and now obviously you're no longer training for PBs and smashing it out, you're now running for obviously different reasons. How have you found running now for you?
My relationship with running is an interesting one, because, you know, back in my late 30s, it was a way of distracting myself, and it was a way of feeling good about myself when everything else was going wrong. And then when my marriage broke down, I found myself in a position where running became my thinking time. And I would go out and run for, you know, many, many miles, and it would just be my time to process my thoughts. And it was less about the time, or less about the pace that I was running at. And it was more about trying to actually decide where my life was going. And I've always said that running gives me this ability to just have crystal clear thoughts. And actually, I made some fairly life-changing decisions whilst I'd been out running.
Who hasn't though?
Yes.
who's not been for a run and suddenly had an epiphany or a business decision or something that you just go, yeah, that it's clear in your mind, isn't it? It does. Running just clears your mind. And if you're not a runner, but you still exercise and you go to the gym, you have those same moments. Exercise, just, I don't know what it is, and it's obviously scientific garbage behind it, but it just clears your mind and your senses, and it allows you to think better, it allows you to think clearer. I've had those many a time on a run, and obviously you have now. And what was that moment, that switch, and you just thought, now is the time?
Yeah, and I can't remember it being on a specific run, or I can't remember exactly how it happened, but what did happen was a shift from being ashamed of my feelings to actually feeling quite proud. Because by that time, I'd started opening up to a few people. You know, I'd confided in my family. I'd confided in a few close friends. And actually, I confided in some people at work as well. And to my surprise, they didn't disown me. You know, they were actually quite understanding. And, you know, I came to think, actually, maybe there is a way forward. And I'd broken this whole journey down into a series of mini steps, because quite honestly, if I ever looked too far into the future, it just frightened me. I think absolutely that's the way to do it. And, you know, I hope now
in a way you could probably sort of make that sort of same advice for running as well. You know, if you go too quickly, build up too quickly, you know, there could be injuries, there could be disappointments, there could be all sorts. But if you build up slowly, chunk it down.
Yeah, and it's been likened to running an ultra, that basically you break it down into the checkpoints, and you know, you just have mini targets, rather than thinking, oh my god, I've got, you know, 50 kilometers ahead of me, 100 kilometers, whatever it might be. You just think, you know, it's an hour to the next checkpoint. And you know, I never saw myself getting into this stage or this position in my life. You know, when I started confiding in people, it was to explain why my marriage broke down. It wasn't with a view to transitioning. And no. Because to my mind, that was a step too far. And, you know, I didn't think I had it in me. But, you know, slowly and over time, I came to realize that maybe I could.
And have you built up a reasonable support crew now for this endurance run of yours?
Yes, I got the best support crew, actually. Hey. But I will say that my friends have been astounding. And actually, pretty much everyone I've told has been really supportive. You know, I've had the odd disappointment along the way. But actually, considering how I thought it was going to play out, it has been so much easier. And that's not to say it's been easy, but it's been so much easier.
Do you think, though, on that, do you think because of the timing of you coming out and changing and being more open and everything else, at this day and age, compared to when you probably first started thinking about it, when it probably helps a tiny bit because people have a bit more understanding?
Yeah, I think society is more accepting than it ever has been. And, you know, there are still bigots out there, and there are still people who would have a big issue with what I'm doing. But I couldn't have done this 10 years ago. I certainly couldn't have done it 20 years ago. And the other issue is, you know, go back 20 years and much like we were saying with the running programs, you know, the information just wasn't out there. You know, growing up, I didn't know what it was I was feeling because I didn't have the internet to turn to. I couldn't talk to my family. I just knew I had these feelings that weren't normal. So that made it that much harder.
And obviously there is obviously that information out here, but like we said, with the running as well, with the information, there's so much bad information out there. There's obviously the negative side to social media as well, as you've probably witnessed through running as well as transgender issues as well.
Yeah, I mean, I consider myself very fortunate, if I'm honest. I mean, I'm quite open with my story on social media. I do put myself out there and, you know, I am visible and therefore I am potentially a target for the haters. But actually, I've had very little negativity and that for that, I'm really grateful. And please, long may that continue, because I'm
definitely
I'm quite a fragile person. And actually, I would struggle.
Yeah, and I think what you and the likes of Toby Fells, who's known as the Transgender Trail Runner on Instagram, I've formed a bit of a friendship relationship with both of you now, and I think it's great that your stories are being told, because now more people are maybe not coming out, but they're actually seeing. You know what? It's not as scary out there as it might feel without people like you and Toby talking about, you know, life and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I'd like to think it helps, you know, people coming to terms with themselves. But I also hope it just helps educate people, you know, the general public, because, you know, this isn't something that I've embarked on lightly, and it isn't for reasons other than trying to be true to myself. I mean, this isn't a journey that anyone would choose because they wanted to. I mean, it's cost me so much financially, you know, and emotionally.
Personally,
I've lost so much. And you know, I just hope that people realize, you know, that the cost that comes with this. And I'm not looking for sympathy. I'm just looking for people to try and understand.
And I think that's it. I mean, I've over the last few years, I've tried to make more of a concerted effort to understand, because who knows what may happen in the future. My son might decide he might want to change genders, or he might come out as homosexual, or he might not come out as anything, you know, but I need to be able to give him some form of answers or point him in the right direction, so he can get the answers that he requires. And the only way I could do that is by learning myself, and understanding, and speaking to, you know, the people who have possibly the answers, like yourself, who have been there. So we could all be that little bit more kinder and understanding if we just take the little time to have a sit down, have a coffee, have a cake and chat, really, isn't it?
It is, yeah, because everyone's got their story. And what I've come to realise is that, you know, everyone's got their demons. You know, everyone is wrestling with something. Even those people, you know, like I was, that seemingly have it all. And I've been quite privileged because I've been so open with people about my story that actually a lot of people have confided in me. And you know, it's actually very eye-opening, but it's equally as sad to realise that, you know, people are carrying a lot of baggage with them because they don't feel able to share it for whatever reason.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I mean, I've only recently, over the last couple of years or so, started talking about my story and where I was and the demons I dealt with and standing on the cliff wanting to throw myself off. And as I said to you earlier, you know, I reckon 90% of the ultra runners out there, long distance runners, have a story to tell, because there's a reason why we put ourselves through pain and the emotions and the roller coaster of a long distance race and the training that goes with it. it's that self-harm type thing with benefits, all that sort of stuff. And that brings us on to your back to your running again, because since all then, and obviously you now have run some more races. You raced an awesome race out in America with Joe Meek recently, and you did the Atlantic Coast Challenge as well down in Cornwall. How were they for you now in this new, better you, that, you know, this new second edition, or whatever you want to call it?
Yeah, it's wonderful, and it's lovely to be back in the running community, because, you know, after my marriage broke down and I actually started taking steps towards becoming Sian, I was not in a great place. And actually I took myself away from a lot of things. I at work, I was the shadow of my former self. You know, I'd lost the will. I'd lost the will to do most things, to be honest, but I'd lost the will to socialize with people. And I was also very conscious of, because I'd been taking hormones, that my running times were getting slower, and I started to grow my hair out. And actually, I didn't want people.
So is that all natural hair?
Yes, it is. Yes. Yes.
There's me going bald and you're bloody growing your hair out.
Well, a lot of my school friends are bald, and it's one of the things I'm so grateful for, that I've got my own hair. But now I took myself away from the running scene, and I continued to run, but I no longer ran with people. I no longer ran down the club, and I just kept myself to myself. And it's lovely to actually come back into the running scene and actually be accepted, because, you know, I'm acutely aware that, you know, there's people who have issues with you know, with transgender athletes, but actually for me, I've been so well received, and to actually be getting out there and racing, and, you know, I'm a shadow of the racer that I used to be, but I still now love just being in that environment. And I remember when my first big step back into the community was, well, it was probably, it was about 3 years ago, probably. And it was at my local park run in Park, in just on the edge of Dartmoor. And it was the first park run that I'd done in a long, long while. And it was my first park run where I was going to present and run it as Sian. And I was so nervous driving there. And I remember in the car on repeat, I just had the song Something Inside So Strong. And it was just what drove me to get there. And I did this park run, and that was where I met Joe Meek for the first time. And from there has blossomed the most, you know, amazing friendship. And I think that just goes to show that the power of running.
Although you were an experienced runner and you had all this experience behind you, you felt like a first timer turning up a park run. Someone who may have never run a race before, never run a park run before, you know, wanted to make a difference in their life, wanted to change, and this was their first stepping stone. That's pretty much what you just described, except you're not one of them. You're an experienced runner.
And I didn't know how I'd be received. You know, it was going back to an arena that I knew so well, but at the same time it felt like I'd never been there before. But obviously, as soon as you start running, I just remember this sense of, isn't this amazing that I'm running, and, you know, I've got longer hair, and, you know, maybe like a pink t-shirt on. It was just so lovely to be able to do something that I love, but as Sian. So it was very special.
And that baying back into the running community and all that now brings me on to the fact you're an ASICS front runner, and you're in the ASICS front runner UK community and everything like that. You've been with them for a year. How has that been for you? Because that's opened you up into a further audience as well, hasn't it?
It has. So I joined the team in March of last year, and that has just been a wonderful experience for me. And actually, the recruitment process for this year's intake is ongoing at the moment. But for me, it's given me a platform. It's allowed me to be more visible. And I think a really important thing for me is it's actually validated the decisions that I've made in my life. And the fact that a big brand is willing to be associated with me is really important. And I think it validates the decisions that I've made, but it also is reward for my running. And what I will stress is that the Front Runner team is a team for everyone. So it's not about the people who have the biggest following on social media. It's not about the people that are the quickest runners. It's about the people that have got a love for running and for movement generally, and seek to inspire others. And I think that's what's made the team so special. And there's maybe 45 of us across the country.
Is there any others transgender in the team? Just you? Are you the only one?
As far as I'm aware, within the UK, there's about 45 of us, but across the various countries, I think there's a total of about 600. And as far as I'm aware, I'm the only transgender runner on the team.
So it's a major milestone, really, isn't it?
Oh, it's huge, yeah. But you know, the team is wonderfully diverse. So we've got people from all walks of lives. We have got quick runners. We've got an Olympian on there. But we've got, you know, a hugely well represented cross section of society. And it sounds very, it's easy to say, but it is one big family. And you know, we have WhatsApp chats that are just, you know, they're wonderfully exciting at times and just funny. But conversely, you know, if you're having a low moment, you know, people will rally around you. And there is a real sense of community within that team. And, you know, I'm delighted to be on the team again this year, and actually just to see the excitement around the recruitment process at the moment is great, because it reminds you of just, you know, how special it is to be on that team.
I think it's just nice just to see that smile on your face as well.
Yeah.
Because that smile obviously had disappeared for quite a long time. And the fact that you're now smiling, you're happy within your running, you're running some remarkable races again, you're creating beautiful friendships, including with me. And it's just nice that you've got that smile on your face, and you may not be 100% happy, but you're more content with the direction that you're going.
Yeah, I think having been as low as I was, you know, it is nice. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that my life is all, you know, rainbows and unicorns, because, you know, there are still elements that are really difficult. But actually, yeah,
you know, picking the right nail varnish, I know it's difficult.
But for me, and it sounds really vain, but for me, it's the look in the mirror test. And, you know, I look in the mirror and I smile, and, you know, and I'm really proud that I've got myself to this position in my life, because, you know, it could have easily been a very different story.
And that's amazing, because there is a lot of people that don't like to look in the mirror. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of people. I'm one of them. I hate looking in the mirror for my reasons, but the fact that you can look in the mirror now, that's a bigger, major thing. And you know, you should be proud of what you've done, what you've been through, and where you are now. And like I said earlier to you, you know, your past is your past. You can't change it, but you can only change your future. And that's what you've done. And that smile is now on your face. And we can only be, you know, happy for you and proud for you.
Thank you.
That's right. So moving on, we'll now do our 10 quick fire questions. Okay. Nice and simple, nothing crazy on there. All right, so we'll start off first. Do you have a favourite snack you like to eat whilst out running your long runs or Dartmoor, all that sort of stuff?
Flapjacks. Individually wrapped flapjacks are a godsend.
Nice. Okay. Do you have a favourite meal you like post-training?
I do still love pasta with pesto, actually. That's a go-to.
Okay. Do you have a favourite bit of kit that you can't sort of go without?
Oh gosh, it's got to be my trail pack, actually. That's been that's been a big win. It's unsurprisingly it's Essex, but it's been a game changer really in terms of just I hadn't really had a trail pack until about 2 years ago, so that's just allowed me to go longer. Awesome. Yeah.
Okay. Do you like Marmite? Yes or no?
No.
We were liking each other. Okay. Is there a song that would describe you?
I'd probably have to quote the one I mentioned earlier, the Something Inside So Strong by, I think it's Libby Sifri.
It is a good song. If someone was to play you in a movie, all right, about your life, who would you have play you?
I don't agree with it. It's very kind of them to say. I've been told I look like Jennifer Aniston, so I will take that every day. So I'll take Jennifer Aniston.
Mine
is the accent. She can work on the British accent.
Yeah, she'd need to work on that. Okay, do you have a favourite race?
Oh gosh. I'm going to say the Chester Marathon, actually, just because of the marathon PB. It's very fond memories, and it's actually a great event, very well organised.
Okay. If you had to go to a happy place, where would that be?
The Coast Pair.
Yeah.
South West Coast Pair.
Yeah, something special about that, isn't there? Who inspires you? You inspire a lot of people, so who inspires you?
Gosh. I'm not sure there is anyone specifically, because I've never been one sort of hero worshipping, to be honest. I think a lot of people do very inspiring things, but I wouldn't say I wouldn't have one person that I put up there on a pedestal.
Okay, and finally, pineapple on a pizza, yes or no?
Every day.
Excellent. That's the end of the 10 quick fire questions. We'll finish off now with any advice for beginner runners. So if someone taking up running, is there anything that you would like to pass on to them if you had known what you know now back then when you started, all that sort of stuff?
I think the first thing to say is find your reason, know your why, is the phrase really. Why is it you run? Because running can be very difficult. It's a fairly simple process, but actually if you do it properly, it can actually be quite exhausting, and therefore you need to know why you run, because a lot of people just find it's hard, and therefore they don't take to it, and therefore that ends their love affair with running. So I'd say know why you're doing it, and I think the other crucial thing is to build up gradually. I think people are far more likely to stick with it if they start gradually, even with run walks, if that's what it needs. But work into it, and before long you will be running, competently. But I think if you throw yourself in there too quickly, you're either going to get injured or you'll find it too difficult and you'll walk away from it.
I totally agree. I mean, especially the reasons why, and I've said it to others as well. When you're struggling to lace up your shoes the next day, or you're having that lack of dip in motivation, remember why you started running in the first place, because that's normally the driver that gets you out of the door.
I always say, there are days when actually I don't want to get out the front door, because, it's either cold or it's dark, or you've had a long day at work, or something's happening that needs your attention. But I've never done a run and regretted it. You always come back feeling better, whether it's because you've had a good run, or you've just cleared something off in your head, or you've just had a change of scenery. You always take something from a run.
Definitely. And finally, if people want to come and follow your adventures, where can they find you?
Sure. Probably the best one is Instagram. So either search for Sian Longthorpe, or my username is Sian_runs_. And the other way, I guess, is to Google Essex Front Runner UK, and you'll see me in there along with my team. And hopefully we can inspire you to either start running or keep running.
Excellent. I'll drop, obviously, your Instagram tag in the descriptions later on as well. But for now, Sean, we'll have a catch-up chat after we've finished recording. But for the podcast, thank you very much. It was short notice, I know, for jumping on and having a chat. It was really nice to run with you today as well. And I just love chatting to people anyway. But it's been really nice to catch up with you. And who knows? Maybe someone listening or watching will relate, and it may just help them in their venture.
I hope so. But it's been an absolute pleasure. And yeah, thanks for letting me share my story.
You're welcome. But for now, that's If My Feet Could Talk podcast. Thank you very much. What an amazing woman Sean is. Absolutely loved that chat, and absolutely loved learning more about her, really, and her incredible story. And it was just nice to sit down and chat earlier with her and to chat now. And the fact that, you know, she made the time to come and run with me as well just shows the type of person that she is. That was a fantastic episode. I really enjoyed making it. And hopefully you enjoyed watching it and listening. Please, obviously, go give her a follow. Give me a follow, give me a like, give me a share, subscribe, obviously, to all the various different outlets. The podcast is doing really well. It's doing better than I thought it'd ever do. So, yeah, please show the love, share it, all right? It might help someone. But for now, thank you very much for watching and listening to If My Feet Could Talk. I'm your host, Owen, also known as the Ultra Running Matlow. Until next time.